Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Ball game. Astros complete a pitching gem all 3 days against the Phillies, limiting Philadelphia to one run in 3 days. A 2-1 win and a three-game sweep against one of the best teams in baseball coming in having won 9 of 11.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they came in hot, Philly. They leave cold. Seth, have you heard the good news?
I've heard all the good news.
Have you heard the good news, my friend? 15 games over 500. We will play this song. We will rattle this tune. We will play this banger. As long as that ceiling keeps going up. Every time they go the next step above 500, we celebrate. 15 games over 500, 6.5 game lead, and it's not even July yet. That was a fun series, my man.
It's the seventh best start of the first half of the season in Astros franchise history.
Okay.
If you had told me a couple weeks into the season that they would be up there in the top 10 of anything in terms of team performance over there. You could have told me back then, hey, they'll claw their way back over the course of time, but it did not look like it was possible at all. And this series was kind of emblematic of the way in which they've done it, that you go up against one of the best teams in baseball right now, and they can't – it takes them – until the 26th inning of baseball played for the Phillies to score a run.
Yes.
And, I mean, that's good for them. That's performance in the clutch.
Big
time. You know, you're a couple innings away from not from getting shut out for an entire series. Well, then you came up big. There
and
you go.
I had forgotten they got shut out the last time they played last year, too. Like, they were the scoreless, the consecutive scoreless inning streak against the Astros was up to 30 at that point, just going back to last year. So the Astros, just spanning over two seasons had just locked this team down. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's funny. It's funny you bring up the start. When they were, yesterday's the 81st game. So we're exactly at the halfway point right now. So this is an easy spot in the calendar to do some assessment and storylines. And obviously it's very easy to be on pace guy. You just multiply everything times two. When they were at 80 games yesterday, I went back and looked to see, okay, what the 2 years they won the World Series. And then 2019 I always use also because I feel like that was the best team of this era. They didn't win the World Series, but 2019 was the best team.
Just like stacked.
Yeah.
They were a potent, record-breaking type of play on both offense and defense.
Right. Yeah. Like in a fantasy world, if I had to pick one Astros team to go to war with against all the other teams in baseball, I would have picked the 2019 team. That went into the World Series with the Nationals. They just flukily lost. You said this is the seventh best start. Those three teams are three of the teams that had better. So they all had won 50 games at least, 80 games in. But the Astros had won 47. This team, and I say that because not to downgrade them, those were three great teams. Two that won a World Series and one that should have won a World Series. The Astros are right there right now with those teams in terms of pace. Like last year, They were still trying to use your words, they were trying to claw their way back. They were still trying to catch the Mariners. They've done an amazing job this year. And I thought yesterday was just, this whole series was a microcosm of what they've been all year long. Not high scoring games. I mean, ultimately, it was like a soccer tournament more than it was baseball with the final scores. But yesterday I thought was really emblematic. You get seven shutout innings from Hunter Brown. Brian King doing what he did has not been emblematic of the bullpen. It's more emblematic of what he's been lately. But then Cam Smith getting a clutch hit, dude. I tweeted this out after that hit. Maybe the most encouraging thing about Cam Smith is he does seem to have some semblance of a clutch gene. He's gotten a lot of big hits this year so far.
He had the walk-off. This was a go-ahead.
Yeah,
there's no part about him that looks like the moment is too big for him.
Exactly.
And they've done a good job, I think, as the Astros – as an organization, it seems like they have so many of these guys that are mature beyond their years when they come up. But I could go back through the last 10 years and, grab bag various ones. Pena is that way in some regards. Just kind of approaches the game like a veteran baseball player.
Very much.
Yeah, so Cam huge there. And I like that he got it over the head of Trey Turner on that go-ahead hit. Because Trey Turner, sometime over the course of the last 3 days, I grew to hate him. And the only thing I can really put my finger on is his stupid stance, where he looks like a Tecmo version of a baseball. Does he not just look like, oh yeah, that's a 1993 video rendition of what a baseball player looks like at the plate?
Yeah.
Just with his, like, perfectly upright with his bat held out kind of stiffly. Screw him.
He's the one, Seth, whose slides into home always go viral. Yeah.
I know that. Thanks, yeah. Sean. Yeah.
Well, to the audience.
He wasn't going to have an opportunity to do that in this game. Yeah. He had an opportunity to get up there and look like an awkward 13-year-old at the plate. I hate him.
I wasn't trying to little bro you. I was doing it for the benefit of the audience, so they knew who it was.
Right. Yeah. Said Seth. So, sorry. I thought you were addressing me.
Gotcha.
Screw Trey Turner. Yeah. I'm glad his team sucks.
Yeah. Here's Cam Smith's RBI single yesterday in the clutch.
Neither team has been particularly good with runners in scoring position in this series. Astros trying to change that here. Line drive.
Score the go-ahead run. 2-1 Stros in the eighth. Cam Smith, a big RBI.
Cam coming up clutch again. It's not a walk-off, but it definitely counts as putting the Astros ahead. Big two-out RBI, a laser just over the head of Trey Turner.
Here's Joe Espada after the game on the big hits that Cam Smith's been getting this year.
Cam Smith, how many times he comes up this year, big moments, get hits like those. That grows your confidence. You know, this kid is just a young kid, and he gets big at-bats against a really good pitcher, and that stuff matters. You look down his career 3 or 4 years from now, those hits, they matter.
Yeah, he's been great, man. They are winning the Kyle Tucker trade right now, which is crazy to say because he's an MVP candidate over in the National League now.
I mean, yeah, look at that inning. I mean, his eighth inning was Paredes was hit by Fitch. Yep. Altuve advancing with that broken bat single. And then Cam, there were two outs there, right, when Cam hit that?
Because Walker popped up afterwards to end the inning.
That's right. Oh, he did, didn't you? Don't you say? Okay.
Yeah. Tell me if you've heard this before. Well, at least he made contact this time,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That was good.
He's
fine. Brian, we got no choice. He's playing. They ain't calling up John Singleton to take over at first base like they did last year.
But yeah, that inning, as far as the trade goes, and I'm sure Wesneski was enjoying it somewhere.
Yeah.
So the trade so far as you head into this series against the Cubs, my God, I'm even willing to relax a little bit on my requirement that Paredes and Cam Smith hit a combined 7 home runs in this 3-game series.
Have you adjusted that number at all, or are you still?
I might be happy with 6, but Tucker still has to go 0-for. If Tucker doesn't go 0-for, this series will be a vast disappointment.
That's a reasonable ask. The 6 home runs, you might be out over your skis a little. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. But we'll see. The Tucker, yeah. So we'll see tonight. Yeah, Kyle Tucker, Ryan Presley coming to town. The other thing, the other person we got to give props to is Brian Abreu. And I tweeted just a week ago when Brian Abreu was scuffling on a Friday night, able to get out of it, but was doing what he'd done all year, putting guys on base and then kind of weaseling his way out of it. He's been amazing. He's been amazing, Seth, since I tweeted the following. Brian Abreu is the worst sub-2.5 ERA pitcher I've ever seen. Now, was I drinking at the time? Yeah, it was a Friday night. Of course I was. I was a little angry that he was making me stress out over a baseball game.
Yeah.
Since then, he has pitched 3 2/3 innings, given up one hit, walked nobody, given up no runs, obviously, and struck out 8 guys in 3. Of the 11 outs he's got, 8 of them have been via strikeout. He's got a whip of 0.273 and a strikeouts per 9 innings of nearly 20 right now.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised when I saw that tweet by you. Yeah. You know what you reminded me of?
What?
Richard Smith, the former Texans defensive coordinator.
Wow.
Because he was fun. He was the kind of coach that anytime, like 3 times a meeting, he would say, "This is the worst I've ever seen in my life, in my 20 years in the NFL." And you'd be like, it's like some play where a defensive tackle got reach blocked or something. You're like, I don't know if you've been paying attention, coach, but that was a bad rep, but it wasn't the worst I've seen in the last 3 weeks. What's wrong with you, man?
I can't take you at
face value.
I don't know who you hate the most in the world because, you know, I've not asked you that question, but the person you brought up on this show that you've hated the most through the years is Richard Smith, and I just got that slapped on me. Wow.
Yeah, you know, it was just that bad a miserable a tweet. Human being.
It was that bad a tweet, huh?
It was like worst ever. Yeah. All right.
It was in the moment. It was emotional. Yeah. It was during the game. Yeah. It probably doesn't age as well if you just look at it like at 11 o'clock the next morning. But in the moment, I got a lot of support from people on that saying, yeah, man, this guy makes it really stressful. He does. And he did. He had a whip that was not that was not correlated to his ERA. You know what I mean? Like he's, yeah. You know, it's so I'm here to say I was wrong. That's, you know, that's well, actually, I'm here to take credit for it more than anything else. I feel like I inspired him. But yeah, good job, Brian Abreu. I say all that to say good job, Brian Abreu, last night. Struck out all four guys he faced. I mean, that it doesn't get any better than that. So, man, they are stressed out in Philly. We're going to have some Philly audio a little later in the show. They sound like we did the first 3 weeks of the season when the Astros couldn't hit their way out of a paper bag. Yeah. So I'm
sure the good people of Philadelphia are taking it in stride.
Yeah.
It was a very, just a mentally health conscious.
We'll revel in that a little bit later in the show, for sure.
Hunter Brown, just in his lifelong quest to emulate Justin Verlander, is getting closer. I don't have the stats pulled up right now, but I did before the show. In terms of ERA, he's creeping in on Justin Verlander's career ERA.
Really?
So that includes Hunter Brown having a really, really bad beginning to last year in a small sample size where, he's creeping on down. His strikeout rate's a little bit higher than Justin Verlander. He's rounding into form, into being basically a clone of Justin
Verlander. The career ERA thing shocks me because he got called up in 22. So he was horrible at the beginning of last year, but he was up for a whole season in 23 where he was not great. You know, he wasn't. Yeah, that's. Wow, that's wild. I mean, it does go to show you what kind of season he's having this year.
Well, yeah, he's having that kind of. It's not like Verlander was a 1.5 ERA every single season or anything. So.
No,
that's a career long thing to be as good as Justin Verlander. But I mean, in so many ways, he's becoming that trustworthy. You just feel that good about
and
him.
And he pitches. He looks exactly like him when he pitches. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I don't know when he probably. Let's see, I don't want to do the age math right now, but from the time he was actually really caring about his pitching form and everything, Justin Verlander was the guy he was watching on television every 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Man, Richard Smith. Seth chose violence this morning on my Brian Abreu tweet.
I haven't seen Richard Smith in 20 years. He might be a completely different person by
now.
Sure he is. He's still coaching in the league. Yeah, people change.
Yeah.
You know, I was in his role as a defensive coordinator, too, where sometimes guys are different when they're a coordinator versus when they're a position coach.
But you weren't comparing me to that version of it. You were comparing me to the version you hated, and I love that. All right. Bobby,
what alcohol does to people, Sean.
Bobby Slowick. Bobby Slowick. A chart came out yesterday. Obviously, this is radio, so we can't post the chart for you in your cars right now. But the ultimate determination from this chart that came out on play calling last year around the NFL – this will hit home with Texan fans hard. And it does, in a way, makes you more enthusiastic about the upcoming season. We've got that for you coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we're forward-looking on this station and is a city. We're looking ahead to 2025, but boy, when a chart like this comes out, I like to think this is going to get me excited for a new play caller for the Texans. That's the prism. I choose Seth. We'll lay this out in a second here. There's a chart that dropped yesterday on Twitter, a graph that shows it shows the play calling success of the 32 offensive play callers in the NFL last year. And it's not great for Bobby Slowick.
It tried to separate the players from the play calling in such a way that you, what was this guy doing with what he had and the tools he had at his disposal? And it didn't look good for the Texans.
No.
So it's a nice graph with, Matt LaFleur is up in the upper right quadrant. Kyle Shanahan's over to the right. Liam Cohen, who just completely turned around the Bucs offense, they're up in that upper right quadrant. And then way, way, way down at the left, you have to, on your phone, you have to click on the graph to even see the Texans logo. Bobby Slowick at the all by himself in the very bottom left corner of the draft, just trying to gain a little bit of ground on the second worst Raiders. It just looks disgusting.
You framed it perfectly, because if you look at it on Twitter, there's actually two graphics. There's the graph itself that has the logos dotted all over the place.
Yeah.
And then they took that and they made a chart with the 32 names and the and some percentages with, you know, some of the percentages. If it's a really dark green, that's good. If it's a really light, you know, one of those things. So there's two graphics. And, you know, if you look at it on Twitter, you can't see the entirety of each graphic when you look at the tweet.
Yeah.
Bob, yes, Bob, you have to actually open that whole graph to be able to see Bobby because he's so far off to the left.
It looks like he didn't hear the starter's pistol. You know, it's just kind of like he's in his sprinting crouch, and everybody else is taken off,
yes.
And he's just sitting there. Like he all of a sudden seized up fight or flight. Yeah.
Well, in the summary of this, you know, the tweet and the chart come from somebody named Joseph Bryan, who's using things like he says using PFF grades and play calling data from the last 15 years. I created scores on how well a play caller influenced each regular season. You may agree or disagree, but the stats are solid. And so then he tweets the graph we're talking about where you have those various
2024 season.
Yeah, last season. And you got the various names Seth just said of very well-respected coordinators that are in the upper right-hand quadrant. You got Bobby Slowick barely out of the starter's gate at the bottom left corner of the bottom left quadrant. All due respect to Jim Irsay, the bottom quartile of the bottom quartile. And the big thing that comes out of this when you start reading the thread is that Bobby Slowick was not only the worst play caller of the 2024 season, but according to this metric that this Joseph Bryan has, he is the worst of all 15 seasons that this study is part of.
The worst since 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the worst score he had last year. It matches, I think, the eyeball test and what you felt about everything.
You felt about it, yes.
Well, I've talked about it without being able to, because honestly, and the guy that put this together admits, he's very transparent, like, obviously, this is really hard. It's hard to separate the PFF grades from the entire offense and how that affects grades and everything.
Yep.
So it felt good when I looked at it. The one thing that I put a little asterisk on it is that Andy Reid is also in this bottom quartile too.
Okay.
So is Andy Reid, was he that atrocious? Was the offense bad because Andy Reid is all of a sudden a bad play caller?
Right.
I hesitate to endorse that.
Yeah, I do too. And yet, this is one of those charts I want to believe is true. Because it makes me feel better about the upcoming season. Like, then if this chart is true, then what the Texans did this offseason was exactly what they should have done.
Well, what have I been telling you entirely the whole way is that if Nick Caley is just an average offensive coordinator, it should be a big improvement for the Houston
100%,
Texans.
100%, yes.
If he even, leave play calling out of it. He could just randomly point at plays on his card, but if they're executed properly, then they'll be a better offense.
Yep.
You guys know, one of the things that was driving me insane last year was that Bobby Slowick was somehow separating the offensive coordinator from the actual execution. Like, that in a way of, to me, it always felt like kind of sneakily blaming the players.
Yes.
When in fact, as the offensive coordinator, your most important role is the execution.
Yeah.
Are we talking about play calling?
Yeah.
Do you know how many great offensive minds there are where the play calling is actually relatively plain and straightforward?
Yeah.
They just execute like madmen?
Yeah.
And they were doing none of that last year.
No. And obviously the organization and D'Amico Ryan specifically disagreed with Bobby's assessment of what the problem was.
I'll go, because immediately I can hear people thinking like, oh, which offenses are that? Peyton Manning and his offenses. Yeah. They were relatively simple offenses.
Yeah.
They just, Drew Brees, same way. They just executed everything so seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And they just had all the right tweaks to actually make things work and go.
Yep.
But Peyton of all the, it was not the complexity of that offense that made it work. So, it's Bobby Slowick and his inability to get proper execution out of his guys. If you can just get somebody who's average, they're a better football team.
Yeah.
So hopefully Nick Caley's better than average. Not so much that he gets a head coaching offer right away.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's right somewhere there in the sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Bobby.
Have some glaring issues somewhere along the way in the first season. So where statistically you don't look that good, but you figure it out.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
As opposed to getting head coaching interviews after your first season and then being this in your second season.
Yes.
Bobby, yeah. Bobby's a unicorn, man. He's a unicorn, but the body is like a donkey instead of a horse. Like, instead of like a rippling muscle horse, it's Eeyore with just these unicorn horns. Like, he's that far outside the graph, man.
He's one of those. No, he's that goat man from mythology.
Yeah.
Is that a satyr?
No.
Whatever it is. It's like you're kind of like, wow, that's unique, and I don't think it should exist in nature. I'm going to shoot it. Yeah.
Right.
You see a unicorn, you're like, oh, behold the unicorn.
Yeah.
I'm going to change things in my life.
True.
You see a satyr, and you're like, oh, I'm going to kill that
satyr.
Thing. Yeah.
Good. This is a good question. This is a good question on the text line. You brought up Liam. You said Liam Cohen's in that upper right-hand quadrant, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If Liam Cohen is near the top of this thing, does that make you more concerned about the Jags this year? They also asked where the Colts and Titans OCs were on this. I'll find that while you answer that question. So.
We talked about this a little this week, because Liam Cohen did a really good job with Tampa last year. And, you know, that's an offense now going into this year when the Texans face him. That'll be their third new offensive coordinator in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it in 1 year, really turned them around, and in almost every statistical category, took them from near the bottom to near the top. And Baker Mayfield had the best season of his career, statistically at least. So, yes, I think Liam Cohen, just like it is with Shane Steichen in Indianapolis, I feel like Liam Cohen is a bona fide offensive coordinator. It's just a matter of, all right, but is he an offensive coordinator who's also a head coach?
Yeah.
Because he has a lot of, if you judge him by just, if you go by looks, which I think matters for coaches, not handsomeness of face or anything,
you know,
just overall demeanor, the way you carry yourself, yeah, and everything. Right. He kind of looks like a goofy dude that's a career offensive
He's dopey.
Coordinator.
He's
really good
dopey.
At it, but
yes.
Yeah. So we'll
Ball.
See.
Exactly.
He's got an Opie Griffith vibe to him.
Yes.
You know, they're like, okay, Opie, great character and everything, but I don't want you actually being the sheriff someday.
No.
You're gonna get shot by the first perp you encounter.
Yeah, and I definitely don't want you calling plays for my offense.
A little bit of a Mike McDaniel. Not as goofy as Mike McDaniel, but just that. Like, is this a leader of men?
Yeah,
I'm not so sure.
That'll be the big thing. To answer the texter's question, where are the Colts and Titans? Exactly where you, especially with the Colts, exactly where you think they'd be. The way this graph works is the horizontal axis is how good you are at calling passing plays. The vertical axis is how good you are at calling rush plays. The Colts are way up the top near. They're like the second best team in terms of the rush calling.
Yeah.
They're not very good. The team who had a quarterback complete less than 50% of their passes. Now, this is independent of players. This is just play calling. But you know which way the wind's blowing. They're really good on the run game, not so good on the pass game. The Titans aren't very good at either, but they're much better than the Texans. Brian Callahan, I guess, would be the play caller there.
You know,
Shane Steichen in Indianapolis.
You know, I have a hard time saying the word availability. I have to, like, consciously think, don't say it the way people make fun of you for saying it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never realized the way you say the axis. You say access.
I misspoke.
Said,
yeah,
you got horizontal access.
You
said horizontal, and I was like, oh, that sounds sexy.
Yeah.
I've been granted horizontal access.
Wait till
no,
the
but
vertical.
Then you said, I thought you might have misspoken, but then you said vertical access also.
Yeah, I misspoke.
Maybe you just might say it that way.
I misspoke twice. Yeah, I don't
That's
know.
Not how you always say it?
I don't know. I got to go back
no,
and look.
It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
Where I grew up, they say elementary
instead
of elementary.
Okay.
And I didn't realize it until God bless this job. People made fun of me for it on the text line.
Well, how do you say availability?
I can't even. I used to say like availability or something.
Oh, really? You?
And I got mocked relentlessly for it on the text line.
You,
I was like, oh yeah, that's dumb.
You say a few words like Canadian people do. You say organization sometimes.
I'm not
judging on that, but like that's the one where, like if what's Seth say that's unique, maybe indigenous to where his upbringing, I would say he says some more. He lived closer to Canada than most here and says a couple of words out there like a Canadian person would say.
I said the other one, I weirdly say, I'll say Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, my wife's from the same area as me and she makes fun of me for that.
Yeah.
I say cocaine. But that's because of Eric Clapton more so than anything else.
Yeah.
That's not a
song influence.
That's not the way I asked for cocaine when I was, you know, a child growing up.
I got you.
Mama. I guess have some of the medicinal cocaine.
I guess I do. Yeah, you know what? I guess that is. I'm just trying to think. Like, I'm going to say it right now in my brain. I'm like, yeah, I guess that is how I say it. Axis.
It's better than axis or something like that.
Yeah.
You're not trying to sound fancy.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Axis. Yeah, axis. Yeah, that's how I say it.
We get on the vertical I'm in my head axis, a little. And then we get the carry the X and then the Y.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. So we say all this to say that it's going to be a whole lot better in 2025.
That's right.
The play calling. Yeah. Make a shirt that says horizontal access, Seth, and I'll buy it. That's what somebody just said on the text
You've
page.
You've been granted horizontal access.
Wait until you get the vertical access. Little freaky. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Off and running on a Friday. Having a good time with you here. Appreciate you getting up with us. Headlines coming
barely
up.
Barely understanding what Sean's even talking about.
I know. How did I make it this far, mispronouncing axis? All right. Well, Astros win, Astros sweep. NBA draft closes the books last night. A wild story about a former Rocket as well. And we got a suspension in the NFL. I don't think the NFL is buying Justin Tucker's story. We will get to that all in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Ball game! Astros complete a pitching gem all 3 days against the Phillies, limiting Philadelphia to one run in 3 days. A 2-1 win and a three-game sweep against one of the best teams in baseball coming in having won 9 of 11.
It doesn't get any easier. The Cubs coming into town tonight. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But the Astros, as you heard Todd Kalas on the call right there, Space City Home Network, the Astros beat the Phillies yesterday 2-1. Hunter Brown, man, it's a shame Hunter Brown didn't get the W in that one. Brian King came in and gave up a run in the eighth inning. But Hunter Brown was fantastic for seven innings in this game, seven shutout innings. Cam Smith got the opportunity, though, to get a big hit, and he did. Joe Espada said after this game, this felt like a playoff series.
Tell you what, it felt like a little playoff out there today. Fan base, right? Loud. It's fun. That's a fun game. Fun series. Wow. That's a really good rotation. Our guys, too. You know, it was pitching, you know, low scoring games, good defense, clutch hitting. It really felt like playoff.
Yeah, it did. And that's what we were saying before this series. These will be two series, the Phillies, Seth, the last 3 days, and the Cubs the upcoming 3 days, where I think, and we'll have audio later in the show, on MLB Network they were talking about it the last 2 days, like these could be the two teams we see facing off in October with each other.
Yeah, and the Astros are 17-7 in one-run games. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, where sometimes there's a tendency to say, well, that's kind of random, and it's a coin flip whether you win or lose those games. I think there's substance to it. There's still a coin flip element to it. But they, you know, the Astros pitching and their bullpen especially is just so good that when they get to the sixth inning, you've got a better chance than most teams in the league of holding the other team scoreless. So I there's not nearly as much flukishness to this stretch of one-run games that they've won compared to a lot of others. So they're like they're third in ERA right now. Their bullpen is second in ERA. Their starters, which at any given time are two guys that you really know and three guys that you're just getting acquainted with. They've got the eighth best ERA amongst starters in the league.
Yeah.
Fewest hits allowed. First in strikeouts by a big margin.
Yeah.
The Phillies in second place are about 50 behind them in strikeouts. So I don't. There is no part of me that's embarrassed or bashful or anything about the fact they've won this many one-run games.
No.
This is how they're constructed and how they're effective this year.
That's how they. Yeah, it's how they're built, man. It's how they're built. And this was the rare game where the bullpen came in and didn't do its job. Brian King came in the eighth, gave up a run. What happens? The Astros very next inning come back. And Cam Smith gets the big hit to put the Astros ahead in the game, and they go on to win 2-1. Brian Abreu got the save yesterday because Josh Hader had pitched three of the previous 4 days. Abreu was sensational. He came in. He had to come in the eighth inning to clean up Brian King's mess and got a strikeout to get out of that inning and then struck out the side in the ninth. And he struck out every guy he faced. Kudos to Brian Abreu on that. Seth, I don't know if I can frame it any more appropriately than they won two games in this series in which Victor Caratini was the cleanup hitter in one of them and Jake Meyers was the cleanup hitter in the next. Meyers had a great season so far, but he's not a cleanup hitter, you know? Like
No.
And they win the game, you know? A little house money, so it feels good. Cubs coming to town. I'm looking up to see who's pitching. Tonight's a Brandon Walter joint. Brandon Walter against Cade Horton for the Chicago Cubs. The first time, Kyle Tucker and Ryan Presley back in Daikin Park since both getting sent to the Cubs last offseason.
Yeah, so they'll have a nice tribute video. Mm. Get there early. You can give both those guys a cheer. We're nothing but super positive on this show this morning, Sean.
Yeah.
Nothing but love in my heart for Kyle Tucker as he hopefully goes 0-for in this series.
Absolutely.
That's the bar I've set. I will not be happy unless Kyle Tucker goes 0-for in this series.
The Astros were not messing around on social media. After the game was over yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, they put a graphic up teasing ahead to this weekend series.
Yeah.
And it was Kyle Tucker and Cam Smith on the graphic.
Nice.
Yeah, I like
yeah.
it. I like it. That's saucy. I like it.
Cam Smith, if you look at, obviously Kyle Tucker's having a great year, but if you look at Cam Smith's first half of his first professional season compared to Kyle Tucker, it's night and day.
No comparison.
Tucker was atrocious. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, people pointed out when we brought that up, Cam Smith, a couple years older than Tucker was when he came up. Like, it's a drastic difference.
I don't care. Yeah, I don't give a damn. Couple years older, but also has been in Major League Baseball for less than a year.
Yeah,
all
that's right.
Right.
That's
all right.
Yeah.
I've been fed a steady diet of, oh, no, Kyle Tucker's untouchable. He's the most incredible thing that ever lived.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, the NBA draft came and went. The Rockets took exactly nobody. For themselves in that draft, they drafted. They made a couple picks for other teams and picks that they had traded. When you acquire nobody, when you have no picks in the NBA draft, it means one of two things. It either means that you have emptied the chamber and things have not gone very well for you and you're destitute, and we've seen many teams that are in that type of shape right now, or you feel like we got everything we need and anybody that we pick is not going to be making an impact on this roster anytime soon. That's the category the Rockets fall into.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of nice to not have to pay attention to the NBA draft the last couple of days. That was good.
It's not like the NFL draft when you don't have a first round pick or you trade out within the draft where you just feel like you missed out on something.
Right.
This is all about like, oh, nope, we're just going to keep talking about Kevin Durant. That's all the draft sensation or hype I need.
That's all we need. Well, and the draft itself, and we've talked about this, but like Brooklyn had 5 first round picks, used all of them, didn't trade any of them. If an NFL team had 5 first round picks and used them all, we would still be talking about it 3 days later that this team is going to be flipping everything around, you know?
Yeah.
And in the
yeah.
NBA, it's like they have 5 first-round picks. Like, all right, one of them might work out. We'll see.
If you had 5 first-round picks, yeah, and your fan base, the fan base of that team would be convinced that they're going to win the Super Bowl that year.
Yes.
Because even if you reached a little bit on each one of those picks, there's enough hype over those guys.
Right, right.
Yeah.
There's a story, we teased it into headlines here, so we'll get to it here quickly. Dylan Brooks, who's now former Rocket, now Phoenix Sun, has filed a new restraining order against the mother of his 2 children and alleged that she threatened to, quote, cut off his fingers.
Ow!
You know when you've got to file a new restraining order, it ain't great. That means that there's a previous restraining order. But there's an article, I'm looking at the Daily Mail. Phoenix Suns star Brooks filed the TRO against Heather Andrews in Los Angeles on Wednesday afternoon. In the file seen by the Daily Mail, Brooks alleged that Andrews, who's the mother of their 2 children, ages 5 and 2, had hacked into his social media accounts, destroyed his belongings, and threatened to jeopardize his basketball career. They've got copies in here of the text. Like, she sends him dozens of texts with no response from him of just like literal threats of things she's going to do to extort him, things that she's going to do to him physically. I'm not effing around. Just wait.
I'll have someone cut each one of your bleeping little fingers off one by one so you can never play basketball. LOL.
LOL.
She's just kidding, Sean. You guys take things too literally. And actually, now I understand why people are racist.
Yeah,
that's a very nice test.
Yeah.
That's rough, man.
Yeah.
Shit, that is rough. And you're in the, oh boy.
Apparently they met each other a few years ago. You know, she had the one kid, and then it was ugly for a while. Then they made up briefly, had another kid, and now here's where we are with this. the ability for athletes to compartmentalize some of this type of stuff. Like, if I had this going on in my life, I definitely would not have had the best three-point shooting night or best three-point shooting season of my career, like Dylan Brooks just did.
Yeah.
I'd shoot 10% from three if this were going on in my personal life. It's crazy. Crazy story, man.
She called his mom ugly.
That's fighting words right there.
Yeah. She's an attractive lady. Yeah. This is where you got to just kids. Just pay attention. There's more. It's more to it. More to it than just looks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Justin Tucker suspended for 10 games for, I would say, stuff that's in the same neighborhood as Deshaun Watson, for sure. Mm-hmm. Misconduct in a massage setting alleged by 16 women. The NFL has done, the way this works is the NFL does its own investigation into this. And the NFL's investigation into this, which yielded a suspension in much shorter time than Deshaun Watson's did. We didn't get a Deshaun Watson suspension until after he got traded to Cleveland. The lawsuits had been out there for over a year. Justin Tucker suspended 10 games. He's not on a team right now, so his suspension will begin in week one of the season without him, presumably without him on a team, unless he gets signed in training camp. Then obviously he'll start with his new team suspended for 10 games.
That's so when it comes to stuff with domestic violence, every time this happens, you get a lot of people saying, "Hey, what about due process?" Hey, listen, this is not a court of law. This is a collectively bargained process that the NFL has with its employees, and they can pretty much do whatever they want.
Yeah.
They have the authority. They go through. They have an independent former judge usually who makes the decision and everything. So I don't know why his was one more game than Deshaun Watson's.
It was one less, actually.
One less game, that's right.
Yeah,
Watson's
less.
I knew it was a weird number.
Yeah.
It was 11 games.
Yeah, it was 11 games.
I have no idea. And we'll probably never know maybe the full details as to why it was 10 instead of 11. I have no clue.
His representation, I don't know how much we're going to get digging into this, like how much digging into this is going to happen, because Deshaun's initial suspension was six.
Yeah.
And then the league appealed and said no, it needs to that judge and said no, it needs to be more. And it actually went the rare appeal that goes up, it went from six up to 11. Justin Tucker's going to take his medicine, according to his lawyer. He's going to accept the suspension.
That judge did give an explanation in the Deshaun Watson scenario, which basically sounded like I read it as, yeah, I would have loved to give him more, but I have to follow the procedures and the precedents that are in place, and that this is what it is.
Yeah.
And almost sounded like kind of peeved that she was kind of she had to follow the rules of like what she could and could not suspend him
right
for.
And then the owners are like, yeah, you don't need to totally follow the rules, go ahead and give him 11 instead. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we head into the 7 o'clock hour. We are at the exact halfway point of the Major League Baseball season. The Astros are on pace for 96 wins right now. The five biggest storylines so far of the Astros 2025 season, I want to run through these with Seth. And also, we've got audio from Philly Radio this morning. Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, and the rest of the Astros might have ruined Philly fans and Philly Radio people for what their offense is right now. We've got that for you coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Stay there.